Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How you doing over there, man?
I am doing great. How about you, Stone?
I'm still on such a high. Last night, we went out to a restaurant called Echo in Midtown, and it was just a marvelous meal. It was,
venturing inside the perimeter. what is that about?
Aren't you proud of me?
I don't know. Why did this occur?
Because it was Valentine's Day.
Oh, Valentine's Day, right.
But I would characterize it as fancy country. So I still got my pork chop, my greens, my sweet potatoes, but it was smoked sweet potatoes
there
and greens with fancy cheese in it. And pork. So in answer to your question, I'm doing great. I'm very excited about today's segment. I was on the phone with this gentleman earlier in the week. It took every fiber of my being not to just press record and conduct the interview right then and there. Because every time he said one thing, I wanted to ask him three more. But I did it, Lee. I was able to hold back. I wanted you to join me in interviewing this gentleman. So please join me in welcoming to the broadcast sales performance coach, Alan Allard. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, Stone. Thank you.
Now, Alan, can you share a little bit about sales performance coaching? What is that?
Well, in a nutshell, I help salespeople to dramatically increase their income and their sales.
And salespeople tend to be interested in that subject, I would imagine.
That's about all they're interested in. Yeah.
So now, how'd you get into this?
My background is I was a former psychotherapist in Naperville, Illinois, a western suburb of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I had clients that were in sales. And originally they would come to me.
So you weren't in business, like you were a psychotherapist.
Yeah,
that was your business.
I was in private practice. So essentially I was a salesperson. I had to market my practice, myself. And I noticed that the salespeople who came, they would come because their marriage was in trouble or they were having depression, they were burned out. And as we fixed those problems, their sales started going up. And I had more salespeople begin to ask me, can you help me to grow my sales? Mm-hmm. And about that same time, I had companies asking me to come in and do some workshops for them. So it was just a natural progression.
But some of your clients were just like people depressed or teenagers, or it could be anybody, right?
I dealt mainly mm-hmm. with adults, mm-hmm. but it was the general public. And obviously, some of those people were in sales. Some of them were individual salespeople. Some of them were sales executives. And the sales executives started saying, you know, what I'm learning and what I'm changing in my relationships or my life, I'm starting to use with my team and I'm getting better results. I'm listening more. I'm paying more attention. I have more influence. So can you come in and coach me with that? Or can you come in and do a workshop for my people?
Now, how was it from a career standpoint for you to make that transition? You know, maybe I should do some less therapy and more coaching, because that seems like a fairly large
pivot. So he goes home and he tells his wife, I know I was doing this up to today.
My degree's in this.
What was that? Yeah.
Well, I have the most supportive wife in the world.
I believe
so. I was actually a sales rep with Motorola and before I developed my private practice. And she asked me one day, well, why have you never used your degree in psychology? And I thought about it and I realized, because I don't think I can make any money there. and I like making money and I like, you know, the things that it does for the family. Yeah. And I thought about that for 6 months and decided, you know, that's not a good excuse. So I took an entry-level job in a psychiatric hospital, a private psychiatric hospital. And then I started a private practice on the side. And in about 6 months, the income was enough for me to go full-time with it. So I did that for 12 years. But I was never a typical therapist. I refused to diagnose my clients and give them a label. My only interest was, you know, where do you want to be? Let's talk about how to get you there. And so...
So it was less hashing the past. It was more of just, let's fix the present.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you do have to talk some about the past for reasons I won't go into right now, but the goal was always, you know, where do you want to be? What is the positive change and how do we bring that about as fast as we can and as enjoyable as we can?
So there are some elements of the therapy was transferable to sales coaching.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because therapy, Depending upon how you do it, because there are so many different types of therapy. But I was always a solution-focused therapist, and let's talk about, you know, the present and the future, and how do we build what you want as quickly as possible.
Now, when you're working with salespeople, is there kind of common reasons that they're struggling?
Yeah, salespeople are under tremendous pressure. Sales, as you know, has changed dramatically in the past 10 years. It's harder and harder to reach the senior level decision makers. Yeah. And they have their quotas. And according to research, only depending on what research you look at, 50 to 67% of salespeople don't make their quota in any given quarter. So they're always under pressure. And the primary reason for that is not because they don't have the right kind of training in their sales model, the sales process, how to prospect or how to answer objections, because we give really good training on all of that. The problem is taking what they've been trained in and actually implementing it, actually using it. So if you have a salesperson that gets in front of a senior VP of whatever, what happens is most salespeople are wanting validation. They're wanting that person to let them know, okay, you belong here. Because most salespeople, particularly when they get high up in the C-suite, they feel less than that executive. Mm-hmm. They don't feel like they're a peer. And so they don't communicate like a peer. They don't communicate as if we're on the same level. We're doing different things, but I have tremendous value to you to bring. So they know what to say, they know what to do, but they lack the self-value and that deep self-confidence just to relax, to listen deeply, and to connect on that level.
So that subservient positioning hurts them close the deal or sell?
Oh, absolutely. Because no one likes to relate to someone who's feeling desperate or who feels like,
so you
I
think
need
that
approval.
From the VP standpoint, they're seeing a person that seems desperate or not an equal. So why should I take what they're saying seriously?
Oh, absolutely. So let's say that we begin a meeting and I start off by saying, you know, thank you for your time. I know that you're really busy. Well, I've already told you that I think you're more important.
Right, your time is more valuable than my time.
Exactly. But if I meet with you and I'm excited because I know that possibly, not absolutely, but possibly, I have something that can make your work much easier and make you a lot more successful, then I don't think you're doing me a favor by sitting down with me. I think that we're both meeting equal needs.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're describing here sounds to me like a substantial mindset shift. And I am under the impression that the vast majority of sales training, even today, is still more focused on what to do and what to say, and maybe doesn't really get people to shift their mindset. Would you say that's accurate?
Well, you said it better than I can. The sales world has done a great job telling salespeople what to do, you know, what to do for prospecting, what to do when they run into an objection, and all of those things. The problem is in that mindset that you just mentioned. And so what do salespeople do? 60-some percent of their time is not out in the field selling. It's doing busy work. So you have a salesperson that knows they should be prospecting. What usually happens when a salesperson sits down to prospect? What do you think?
They find something else to do.
Right, right. Oh, I need to go into my CRM, or right. I need to do some more research. Why? Because, and here's the interesting thing. Most sales coaches and speakers say that salespeople don't prospect because they're afraid of the rejection. But the fear of rejection is just a symptom. The real thing that needs to be addressed is how that salesperson sees himself or herself and how they feel about themselves on an emotional level. If I feel that I'm equal to whoever I'm calling on and they're not interested, that doesn't affect my self-value. And so I don't
right,
feel
it's their loss. It's not my loss.
You just said something. That's how elite sales performers think. Someone says no to them, they go away saying, you're the one that lost out here.
Exactly.
They don't do that in a negative way, but they really truly feel that way. You're the one missing out. There's plenty of prospects. There's only one of me.
Right.
And so they go away feeling great about themselves. The average sales rep sits there and says, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I say something that gets their attention? Why can't I overcome their objections? The elite sales professional says, I'm not sure what's wrong with them.
Right.
Big difference.
So now when you're working with a client, how do you, like, what's that kind of relationship look like? How does it begin? Like, walk us through, like, if you were coaching us or something like that, so then the listener gets an idea of what they can expect on a coaching call.
Well, the short answer is it's very unique for each person, because what one person needs might not
different,
be at all.
Sure.
But in a general way, we get very, very clear on what is your ideal vision for where you want to go. Once we have a clear understanding of what is your ideal vision, then we simply ask the question, what is it going to take? What has to change and what has to transform to get you moving toward that ideal vision?
Now, is the ideal vision typically, I want to make $500,000 a year? Is mm-hmm. it usually a number and then you just kind of do the math backwards?
Exactly. It's usually they're saying, you know, I want to meet my quota to start with, and then I want to drastically exceed that quota.
Right.
And so once they have a clear vision in mind, and when I work with salespeople, I don't always say, okay, what is the exact amount that you want to sell? Because if we have more of a direction to go in, okay, then we can figure out what do we need to move there. And the problem with setting a specific number is then that gets locked into our subconscious mind, and often we hit that ceiling and we could have done much better.
Mm-hmm.
So if we say, what are the sales activities, what are the sales behaviors that I need to be taking action on? If we keep doing that on a regular basis, then we're definitely going to be getting much closer to that right. ideal vision.
So it's like kind of like in weight loss, instead of saying I want to lose 10 pounds, you say I want to eat healthy. And if you eat healthy at every meal, then you'll probably lose that weight.
Perfect analogy. Absolutely. And so then we're not obsessing on the numbers. Of course, if you're a sales executive or a sales rep, you have a number. So sure. I'm not saying that we ignored the number. But once we have that in mind, then we don't obsess on it, because then we're getting fixed and obsessive about an end result and we lose sight of the process. So we stay very...
So the process really is paramount.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So once you have an opportunity to do this, is there some point in the process where there's some, I don't know what the right word is, capability transfer, where you can get them to the point where either they can sort of coach themselves, or is there a place for developing the sales manager or the sales leader so that they're doing some of the things that you're doing for these folks?
That's a great question. I coach sales managers all the time. A couple of years ago, I developed a workshop for the Center for Disease Control here in Atlanta called Leader as Coach.
They have salespeople?
No. No. But I work some.
That's how good of a salesperson you are.
There we go.
Well, I'll tell you though, a leader, a manager can untrain them quicker than you can train them. So if
Absolutely.
You don't work with it, right?
Okay. Absolutely. And they can demoralize their team very, very quickly. So whether it's with a sales manager or non-sales manager, then we have to say, if we want to fix our sales crisis, then we have to look at the leadership, because mm-hmm. that creates the environment. You can't really motivate anyone, but you can provide an environment. And so that's what leadership and managers are for. However, each sales rep needs to learn how to coach themselves. When I was a therapist, my goal was to teach that person how to be their own therapist. Otherwise, they were depending upon me.
Right.
So I teach a coaching model. I keep it very simple. And then I coach the techniques, the tools, and the mindset of how to coach yourself. That way, even when you're being coached, you can keep that momentum going in between coaching sessions. And then if you stop the coaching, you know how to coach yourself.
Now, I find in a lot of these kind of situations that, like you said before, they understand the kind of the tools of the trade in order to execute. You know, I got to pick up the phone. I got to make these
right.
calls. I got to deal with objections. But a lot of times the kind of support and accountability component is what where they kind of get left behind, because they let that one bad call turn into a bad day, and all of a sudden they're like, you know, oh, my week's ruined. It happened on a Monday, so like I can't right. even focus anymore. You know, like it just kind of magnifies and gets worse.
Exactly. And so a large part of what salespeople need to learn is how to coach themselves to stay in a high positive energy state. Sales requires a tremendous amount of positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when a salesperson feels dejected, when they feel rejected, and they lose control of their emotions, then they're pretty much dead in the water. The elite sales pros know how to bounce back quickly because they reframe everything and they feel incredible about themselves. And so what may knock the average salesperson out is just like a light tap for those elite sales pros.
It's also a balance, because just like there's some people that think, you know, it's Monday, they're all fired up, I'm going to do this, and their first three calls are bad, and now they're depressed, and now they're like, well, I'll do it after lunch, and all of a sudden they don't do it on Monday. The same thing can happen where a good salesperson, maybe they have some success, and they're like, I'm good this week, I knocked it out, you know, by Monday at 10, so I can coast. So you've got to balance that as well, right?
Right. And that's what the average salesperson does. They have some good sales and then they get complacent. They start coasting. The difference between the average salesperson and the high performer is that high performer uses that energy. The best time to make another sell is when you've just made a sell. The best time to make another call is when you've just had a good conversation with a sales prospect. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different way of thinking and a different set of internal tools that people can learn to have. I say that there is no such thing as a bad sales call. How can there be a bad sales call? Just because you didn't get your outcome doesn't mean it was a bad sales call. If you had the courage to make that call and you connected with someone or left a voicemail, then you ought to feel good about that. And then you can say, okay, well, what can I learn from this? What can I do differently next time? One of the coaching techniques that I share is from Marshall Goldsmith, maybe the preeminent executive coach out there. And he has a term that he calls feed forward. We all know about feedback. That's when you come to me and say, hey, Alan, I want to give you some feedback. Right. And I know it's going to be bad news, right? Right.
Exactly. You should have done this.
Exactly. Feed forward is, hey, the next time you make that call and the next time you hear that prospect sharing a concern, how might you handle it differently? So you look into the future. That's the feed forward. Mm-hmm. And when we start coaching ourselves from that standpoint of what will I do differently next time, that's a very different energy than what did I do wrong? What was my mistake?
Right. Very different. It's always mindset. Like kind of building instead of kind of tearing down.
Exactly. It's not looking for blame. It's simply looking for what can I do differently
better.
Next time.
Right.
Exactly.
And so when you're always looking to get better, it sounds like a more optimistic kind of philosophy. So you're more energized to do the work.
Exactly. And so it's not about a salesperson that needs to be fixed. I don't care how badly they're doing. It's about them discovering what are their strengths, what are their capabilities, and really owning that. And by the way, most people don't. One question I ask in my workshop is, how often do you criticize yourself? Now, the tricky thing about that is most times self-criticism is subtle and people don't even realize they're doing that.
Right. Yeah.
But if we can look at our strengths, if we can look at our talent, look at our capabilities, even if our performance isn't showing it and own that, then we can say, how can I tap into that? How can I engage it more consistently? And that mindset is going to produce results every single time.
So is there something or a set of characteristics or traits that as someone who recruits salespeople that we can look for or try to uncover in an interview that might give us a leg up in this game so that we're already beginning with people that might be a little more predisposed to what you're describing?
I think the first thing to look for is this person coachable. Yeah. Because it doesn't matter how good they are. If they're not coachable, they're not going to get better.
What's a clue for someone to say if a person's coachable or not? Is there like a thing that you can look at them at a glance and tell if that person's coachable?
One is they have a growth mindset as opposed to a fixed mindset. Carol Dweck is famous for her book talking about the growth mindset. The growth mindset is that my talent, my IQ, my strengths are not fixed. I can always grow them and fix them.
So somebody that likes to learn or they're an avid reader. And
exactly.
So then that's a coachable person. So if you hear a person like, I don't read, I'm not interested, you know, I hate reading. Those are clues that maybe they're not coachable.
Absolutely. And part of the growth mindset is loving even feedback. Mm-hmm. If you come to me and say, hey, Alan, can I give you some feedback on that sales call? And I say, what did I do wrong? I have a fixed mindset. Mm-hmm. I'm coming from a place of fear, not out of a place of growth and abundance. So you want to look for someone that is coachable, that has that growth mindset, that welcomes feedback, that doesn't take things personally, or is willing to learn how not to take things personally. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is you want to look for someone who has the ability to motivate themselves. we talk about holding salespeople accountable, and most managers don't do a good job with that, but we need to go one step further and teach the sales reps how to hold themselves accountable.
Or just hire people that do that.
Well, exactly.
That saves a step.
Right. It's kind of like the what with the Ritz Carlton, they say, we hire ladies and gentlemen
right,
to serve ladies
and gentlemen.
Yes.
Right.
So they say, we don't teach them to be ladies and gentlemen. Exactly. That's who we hire.
Exactly. Well, that's like Chick-fil-A hires people that smile naturally.
Exactly.
So they don't have to teach someone who doesn't smile to smile. They just pick the right person at the beginning.
No, great example, because it's quite dramatic, the difference between when you go through a Chick-fil-A drive-through or go inside and the people skills that their employees have versus almost all of their competitors. So they do a much better job in hiring those people who already have those skills.
Right.
However, everyone can learn to motivate themselves. They can learn to be self-accountable. But again, the question is, do they have the self-value, that ego strength to be able to get that feedback and that help? And do they want that?
Because that takes a level of humbleness, doesn't it?
Well, it does, depending upon how someone, you know, thinks of humbleness or humility. I'm not a big fan of that word humility because I think it is so misunderstood.
And they equate it with that thing we were talking about earlier, the subservient.
Exactly.
Right. And that's not what you mean at all by humility.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you give me a compliment, the healthy response is
thank you.
Exactly. Right. That's it. And it's to own it and take that in and add that to my positive energy.
Right.
So humility is about seeing yourself accurately, but still believing in your potential and in your worth. It's not about devaluing yourself or saying, oh, it's not that big of a deal. If someone does something good, if they do something effective and someone says, well, you just hit it out of the ballpark, and they say, well, I'm just doing my job, or it wasn't that much, they've just criticized themselves and they don't even know it.
Right.
They should just say, hey, I agree with you. Thanks for recognizing it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Now, is your work primarily in certain industries, or is this something that goes across all industries?
It's across all industries. I'm not specialized in any one industry. I work with real estate people, insurance salespeople, business to business in a lot of different
industries. So typically kind of solopreneurs or individuals have their own practice?
I do work with a lot of solo professionals, consultants, or salespeople, but I also work with companies with their teams.
And you work with the whole team, like sales manager on down?
Exactly.
Now, how has the marketing automation wave, especially here in Atlanta, impacted your business? Because it seems like every company now has a bunch of SDRs, sales development reps doing prospecting to hand it off to the account person. Has that impacted your business at all?
My business hasn't changed. It hasn't gone up or gone down because of that. I think that companies...
It seems like there's a lot more people doing that kind of work, though, that would need this kind of help.
There are. Businesses, however, depend far too much upon technology. They depend far too much on email. There is a sales company that I've downloaded some of their white papers. They have a lot of good things to offer. And I've had their sales rep to reach out to me relentlessly through phone and through email. However, he has never said one thing to get my attention. He wants me to set up a meeting with him. He says only 10 minutes so that he can learn more about my business. And I'm saying, go to my website.
Right. There's lots of stuff about my business.
Exactly. So find something out about me that you can catch my attention with, and then maybe I'd be happy to, have some time with you. So companies and salespeople are hiding behind technology. Why? Because they're afraid to pick up that phone and be rejected. But if you're immune to rejection, then that's not an issue. You pick up the phone, that has the human touch behind it, and you're going to be a million times more effective.
So you're a big believer in the pick up the phone?
Absolutely.
So you don't think cold calling is dead?
No. As a matter of fact, all those people that are saying that cold calling is dead are usually the ones that's trying to sell social media.
Right.
Which, by the way, is great. I think salespeople need to learn and actively use social media. But I don't think that you're going to find any high-performing salesperson that is making it on social
media. Just on Facebook?
No. Or any Snapshot, any of the new current things. The ones that are doing really, really well, pick up the phone and make a call.
And then they build real relationships.
Exactly.
As the process unfolds. Okay, can we talk about me for a minute?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, it is my show, right? So I have a pretty good track record as a salesperson. I've had a good career and I've had quite a bit of success. And I think maybe I have some of these characteristics and I'm pretty good about forgiving myself and all that. And I have to say, I think I probably have not been, and Lee will back this up, a very good sales manager. There have to be some mistakes that I'm making over and over in the recruiting, the developing, the care and feeding of salespeople. So any insight you might have to offer me or our listeners just on some major mistakes to watch out for, some things to make sure you do or don't do, I would certainly appreciate.
Because those are different skills, right?
They
the person
are, right?
That's a great salesperson is not necessarily a great sales manager.
Totally different mindset and totally different worlds. Usually people get put into sales management because they were excelling as a sales professional.
Which seems counterproductive from a business standpoint.
It's
Why would
dumb.
You take your best salesperson off the...
Right.
The job and put them on a different job
right.
that they're not good at.
It's dumb. You've got someone who, you know, might be a lone wolf and pride themselves in it. And someone that is thinking, well, this isn't hard. This is easy. And you put them into a management position. Now they can't empathize.
Now they're in a box.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's like Michael Jordan teaching the rookie how to shoot.
Exactly.
Just you know, do this. I do it every day.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the big deal?
Right.
Yeah. You said you would do this, but you're not doing it. And so there's a disconnect because now that sales rep is feeling judged. They're feeling criticized.
And they're inadequate. They'll never be as good as this person. The guy's a legend.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. So the bigger track record you have, the more you have to take care to get rapport with that person, to establish a trusting relationship.
So your coaching seems to be different when you're coaching a manager than you would a salesperson.
Well, absolutely, because I'm coaching them how to coach other people, how to get results through other people versus how to get results through himself or herself. So in coaching people, we have to ask the question, what do you want? What is most sales managers they do? They say, I'm going to tell you what you want. Here's our quota for you. And they don't have the conversations to determine, has this salesperson owned this quota? Are they excited about it? Do they think that they can achieve it?
What's the best way to give a person a quota? Do you just tell them it's X?
Well, if let's say that I'm a sales manager and the quota was handed down to me, which it usually is, I'm going to be honest with the team and say, hey, here's our quota. Simple as that. But now let's put that on the side and let's have an honest conversation with how do we feel about this quota? Because what I'm looking for is, do they believe that they're capable of achieving it? Mm-hmm. Are they blaming the company?
Right, because if they think it's impossible to go, what kind of effort are they going to give?
Exactly. So my job as a coach, as a manager, is to help them to think it through and help them to see what their real potential is, what their capabilities are. If you're managing me, coaching me, and I know that you believe in me, that's very powerful. That is very powerful. And so now we have a start. And if you communicate in a way of, listen, I've got your back and I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And I am going to go full out to help you to be successful. That's a whole different mindset than here's your quota. Now go out and meet it. And
I'll
by the way,
I'll see you next month.
I'll see you next month. And don't come back to me with any excuses.
Exactly. I did this back in the day when it was hard.
Exactly. most of the things that I read out there, I'm not saying all, but too much of what I'm reading and hearing from sales leaders, sales gurus, is old school archaic way of thinking. So the phrase, you can either get results or you can make excuses. Well, what is that saying to the person? You know, that's kind of like shaming that person.
Right.
That's like saying, you know, you need to grow up and you need to get tough and you need to do whatever it takes. Instead of saying, listen, I know you're capable of this and we'll figure it out together and we're going to be successful together. Very different mindset. So
it's more collaborative, like we're on the same team rather than it's a parent-child thing and I'm telling you what to do and shut up and do it.
That's a good analogy, a parent-child thing. So when a salesperson feels respected and when they feel believed in and they have a place to go through the coaching process, because coaching is all about, what is your goal? What's the current reality? What have you been doing? How's it working? Let's find some solutions to get you to that ideal future much quicker there's no shame in that. There's no fear in that. It's simply a...
Because they're all facts. There are no emotions connected to it.
Well, there's always emotions connected to it. Right, but it's not the...
But the data you're looking at are, I did these calls. This was the result. This is how I, you know, I'm going to do more.
Exactly.
I'll smile more. You know, whatever.
Exactly.
These are things that are just tangible that you can just kind of wrap your arm around. It's not your opinion.
Exactly.
In my opinion, I did six calls. Well, how many? On the phone, it says two. You know, you can't.
You can't argue with that.
Right.
Right, exactly. So, but if you have that trusting relationship, if you have a mutual respect in that relationship, then what can come out of that is beyond what most people can imagine. But most managers have an up-down position. Going back to your parent-child, you know, I'm the one that has the authority here. I'm the one that knows better. I have the answers. Coaching is a lot about drawing out from that person their potential, their skills, their thinking, what they want, and then helping them to amplify that. It's not about telling them what to do or giving all the solutions. The biggest mistake managers make is they give solutions. They say, well, here's how you deal with this problem. Here's how you answer that objection, versus taking the time to coach and say, well, how could you possibly respond to that? Okay, what's another way? Which way do you think would be more effective?
Right. But to your earlier point about when you have a high-performing salesperson that's now a manager, they might feel threatened of somebody beating their record or who knows what kind of weird psychological things happen in their head that they might be sabotaging this person in some ways
and,
because they don't have the skills to articulate, you know, the coaching.
Exactly. So that manager needs to be coached out of that behavior, or they need to be coached out, as sometimes people say. Because coaching and managing is all about bringing out the best.
And holding other people up and pushing them forward.
Exactly.
Now, for you, what does your sales process look like? How do you go about in getting new business?
Almost all of my business, since I've been doing the coaching and the training for about 10 years, is through word-of-mouth referrals. So I just pick up the phone and I call someone. I had a... This wasn't even a former client. This was a friend who works at NASA in Huntsville. And as we were talking about some of the things that about growth and about management, he said, you know, you need to talk with the director of training here at NASA. And so he sent an email, because that's usually what I ask. I said, why don't you introduce me by sending them an email suggesting that we have a conversation and give them a reason why, and copy me on that email, and then I'll pick up the phone and call that person.
Right.
So that's usually how I get things started.
And then, so then you call them up and then you explore what their challenges are and see if there's a way to...
Exactly. I'm interested in, you know, what is your current challenge that you haven't been able to solve yet, or what is your greatest opportunity that maybe isn't going as fast or you haven't taken action on it. So once we have a specific example, then I'm simply going to have a conversation with them and I'm going to provide them with some insights. I'm going to ask them a lot of questions. I'll do a lot more listening than I do talking. And out of that, we're going to see, are we a good fit here? And should we talk a little bit more in depth?
Now, do you have a typical kind of first sale that helps you kind of so they can beta test you and see if they really like you? Is there a workshop or is there
that's,
a coaching call with somebody? What's the usually the first kind of point of entry for you?
Usually, if it is a referral for coaching, then that referral is so strong, then they're pretty much very trusting. And so once we talk about the person that they want coached, but I always talk to the manager, because I want to see, am I going to get support from the manager?
Right.
And then I talk with the person that they want coached to see if they really want coaching.
Right.
Because
to
only,
make sure everything's aligned.
Exactly.
Right?
If those two things aren't aligned, then I don't take it on.
Right.
I have a very high success rate because I'm
you're
I'm,
picky too.
I'm very picky.
You're like Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. Otherwise, I fail with someone.
And everybody's frustrated.
Exactly.
And you won't get the referral for next time.
Get no referrals.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, but oftentimes, if it's not a real strong referral, then we'll talk about doing a half-day training. And I'm much more in favor of doing two or three half-day trainings than one full day or multiple days. Because as you know, you go to training, you're bombarded with a lot of stuff, and then you go out and what happens?
then you forget everything.
You forget everything. Mm-hmm. But if we do half-day trainings, and then we have some coaching follow-up to see
some of the good stuff sticks.
Exactly.
Huh?
And then come back and say, okay, let's talk about how you put it into practice.
Right.
What worked, what didn't learned, work as right. well. And so that's a good way to get started.
Now, I also know that you wrote a book. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I did. The first book that I wrote was on happiness. Back in 2013, I thought, what do I think about happiness? And so I wrote that primarily for myself. But if a sales professional isn't full of positive energy at home with themselves, then that's going to directly impact. So happiness is the fastest way to more success. When you're feeling good about yourself.
Probably outside of sales, just in life.
In life. But I'll tell you, particularly in sales, because again, this goes back to that sales rep having strong self-value and strong confidence. And believe me, we're not going to be happy if we don't have strong self-value and self-confidence. So I followed that up with my book that I just self-published a couple of months ago called The Second Question. And I say that sales professionals only need to answer two questions to be highly successful. Now, that's a bit of an overstatement, but it covers about 90%. The first question is, what actions do I have to take to be successful in sales? Every sales professional knows the answer to that question. We train them very well in that. The second question is where they stumble. And the second question is, how do I motivate myself to take that action?
Mm-hmm. And this book, though, is geared towards real estate people, but I would imagine it would be good in any industry.
It's applicable if you just kind of ignore the real estate agent. I'm actually going to turn it into...
And change it to any other sales
exactly,
profession.
Which will be my next book just for salespeople.
Right. But still along those lines of the second question.
Well, see, that's the problem is sales reps go to this training of how do I answer objections or how do I prospect?
Right. They think it's all these kind of tactics.
Exactly. And that's like you know, me going to a tennis pro and saying, hey, give me the most state-of-the-art tennis racket that you recommend, and I'm going to go out and kill it. Well, I can't use it.
Right.
And if only anything, it is because I don't have that confidence and I don't own who I am and what I have to offer. That probably played out, I would think, to some degree. I hope I'm not getting into trouble saying this, but with the game between the Patriots and the Falcons.
Right.
You know, here you had one quarterback that had much more experience and therefore much more confidence, even when it looked like it was impossible for he and his team to come back. So what was the deciding factor that? It wasn't techniques. It wasn't strategies.
It was belief.
Yes. It was, we're the champions. We win these games. Exactly. And so they stayed calm.
Right.
They stayed relaxed. And they did what they did superbly well.
And then the first hurdle, then the Falcons, they panicked.
Exactly.
And they didn't have the confidence. They thought, up, here we go again.
Exactly.
And that was self-fulfilling for both sides.
Good. Exactly. So the Tom Brady, the Patriots knew how to motivate themselves, if you want to keep it simple. The Falcons knew how to demotivate themselves. Mm-hmm. So the sales professional that wants to dramatically increase their results has to learn how to develop a relationship with himself or herself and understand the process of internal self-motivation. And when you master self-motivation, then you don't stay in your comfort zone instead of prospecting. When the chief executive officer says, well, I want to do a training, the person that knows how to be confident and feels like they're a peer says, well, let's talk about that because I don't think a training is going to meet your objectives. You said you wanted X, Y, and Z. Do you think that a training is going to achieve that? Now, if the CEO says, well, yeah, I do, then the confident sales professional says, well, my experience shows that it won't. Let me tell you why. Would you like to know why? And then they offer the insights of, if we do this instead, that's going to meet your objectives. But that's what salespeople need help in. They need help in how they relate to themselves, what they think about themselves, what they believe they're capable of. And then they need to be able to motivate themselves every day to engage in those basic sales activities that will produce results. If you have a salesperson that's lacking results, you've got a salesperson that's lacking in taking action. It's as simple as that.
This has been a fantastic conversation and learning experience for for me. Now, it may result in me resigning my responsibilities as sales manager and just sticking to the selling, but that might be the best for the company or best for me. This has been so informative. Thank you. I want to make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you and have a conversation with you or someone on your team and or get their hands on the book. What's the best way? An email, a website, whatever's appropriate.
The best way is just go to my website and it's under my name. The first name is Allan, A-L-A-N, and then the last name, Allard, A-L-L-A-R-D. So www.allanallard.com. They can get my book there and learn whatever they want to learn.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, Allan.
Thank you, Stone. It's been great.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, sales coach Allan Allard, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.